America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And it is a great day if you're one of those people who's out there who knows that it would be safer for you to withstand the Delta variant of the COVID-19 virus. It would be safer for you if you could get vaccinated, but you are waiting and waiting and waiting for the FDA approval, for the Food and Drug Administration to go ahead and give its full, complete, unequivocal approval that their COVID-19 vaccine was safe. Well, it just happened. Happened today. And the Food and Drug Administration this Monday, today, granted full approval to Pfizer and BioNTech's COVID-19 vaccine, becoming the first in the U.S. to win the coveted designation and giving even more businesses, schools, and universities greater confidence to adopt vaccine mandates. There's a terrific piece that appeared by my friend Heather McDonald over at the American Spectator, and she is with the Manhattan Institute, where she is a senior fellow, and she's contributing editor to City Journal. Her work appears often in Wall Street Journal and other leading publications, and she's the author of the best-selling book, most recently, The Diversity Delusion. Heather, always great to talk to you.
Well, thank you so much, Michael. And if I can just correct, it's in the Spectator USA, not the American Spectator. It's very confusing, but they are different.
Okay, my article on, terrific. On I just see it says SpectatorWorld.com.
Spectator and USA, is, I think it is. Anyway.
Okay, well, good. It's also posted most easily at michaelmedved.com, so people can get right to it up there.
That's great.
Is this good news or bad news for the country that the FDA has finally moved from emergency approval to full approval for the Pfizer injection?
It's fantastic news, and it's just another saga moment in this miracle of these vaccines that have vindicated Western science and entrepreneurship and creativity. I yearn for freedom from this absurd lockdown hysteria that has taken over the country for the absolutely arbitrary government decision-making of the last 20 months that I think is the greatest public policy failure in U.S. history. And the way to do it, the way to break the backs of these despots who are absolutely insistent on putting all of private economy and private life under their knee, is to foil the mechanism of the rising case count as a reason to keep in place lockdowns and inhibition on private activity. The way to foil the rising case count, to, you know, bring the numbers down again, is to maximize the number of people who are vaccinated. And so I really hope that this approval does change more minds about the vaccine.
As do I. And the one question that you don't answer in your piece, and by the way, some of the numbers that you have there about the despicable lies that have been told about the vaccines being dangerous before this, it raises the question, why should conservatives who really believe in science and the truth and certainly oppose the lockdown strategy that you rightly condemn, why should conservatives be so reluctant to actually believe the evidence of our eyes that the vaccines are very effective in terms of getting us where we want to be?
Well, that's what I am puzzled by in this piece, Michael, because I see them adopting the same faulty logic as the left has done to shut us down, which is, above all, the conflation the left used of deaths with COVID as deaths from COVID. You know, so we had the rising death count, and we saw the deliberate decision to count somebody who dies of a heart attack but also was infected by COVID as a death from COVID. That's how they got the numbers up. Conservatives are doing the same thing now identically in counting deaths with the vaccine as deaths from the vaccine. And so they try to get their hands on numbers of people who have died after having been vaccinated and claim that that was from the vaccine. There's no proof of that. There's no causal proof. It's a correlation. Many of the people would have died anyway. It's the same problem of the comorbidities. As for why that's going on, I think partly it's the shift of administration. This is all happening now under Biden rather than Trump. And I think that we've learned that there is a strain of conservatives that are very susceptible to conspiracy thinking. I would argue the same about the widespread embrace of the idea that the election was systemically rigged, and the only way that Trump could have lost was through deliberate, widespread, coordinated election fraud, which I just do not see the evidence for. There's a mistrust of government, obviously, behind this, but it's particularly acute under Biden.
Well, it even precedes Biden, and some of it even precedes Trump. You make it a hugely important point in your piece, and again, I urge everybody to go to our website and read it. It's not that long, but it's very substantive. And you note that one of the sites that is constantly cited to discredit vaccines and the effectiveness of vaccines says there have been 11,000 deaths from vaccines between December 2020 and July of 2021. Now, that would be a big number, but it's not of COVID-19 vaccines, as you make out the point. This is of all vaccines. This is people who have died after receiving any vaccine. So, and even there with that number, the number comes out, you say, to 0.0067 of the 164 million people who have been vaccinated. It's playing games with numbers, which again is not worthy of the people who are genuinely concerned.
Yeah, and the CDC counted, you know, 1,000 or so deaths with vaccine, which would amount to 0.0007%. You know, the failure of the left has always been a risk-benefit analysis to say compared to what? You know, COVID deaths compared to what? Compared to destroying human prosperity, destroying human capital, destroying children's ability to learn. And that needs to be done here as well. You know, this compared to even to COVID. I mean, the COVID risk is exaggerated, but the vaccines are much safer than getting COVID at this point, however, you know, modest that is. If I could add one more thing to sort of in defense and to try and understand the opposition to this among conservatives to the vaccines, they're also using a slippery slope argument. They're worried that, say, vaccine mandates will result in government control of people having to show a barcode, you know, that they allows them to get on with their lives, and they think that this is a prelude to government taking over more and more private decision making. And slippery slope arguments are valid logically, and the fact of the matter is they will appeal to one depending on how much you value the policy at hand. You know, if you value the policy at hand highly, you'll probably say, as I do, okay, I recognize the possibility of a slippery slope, but I think right now it's more important that we engage in this policy.
And without doubt it is. We will be right back on the idea that incarceration has gone way down, good thing or bad, with Heather McDonald. And on the Michael Medved Show. A pleasure to speak to Heather McDonald on another subject, incarceration and crime. And is there an association between a drop in the incarceration rate and the rise in the violent crime rate that almost every American major city is experiencing? Heather is the author of the tremendous best-selling book, The War on Cops. She is also a contributing editor for City Journal and a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Heather, I was surprised, actually, to see this very rapid drop in the incarceration rate that was cited by Pew Research. They say that it's the lowest rate of incarceration we've had since 1995. That's 25 years. And the 26, actually, if you want to look at it. And that's for 2019. Do you think it's good news or bad news that the rate of criminal incarceration in jails and prisons, state, federal, and local institutions, that it's actually gone down?
Well, it would be good news if we could be confident it was as a result of crime going down as opposed to policies that, falsely portray incarceration as racist. Incarceration is not an end in itself. But it appears to be the best way we know to prevent criminals from offending again. Incapacitation unquestionably works. The alternatives, community control, social programs, have very spotty records. There's very little evidence. There's a term in criminology called evidence-based practices, EBP, to refer to various alternatives to incarceration, various social programs. And it turns out there's very little E for the practices. There's very little evidence for any of these. Few social service programs have been actually designated by the federal government as effective. So we're seeing today on the streets, time and time again, you know, we had a hatchet attack in New York City last week at an ATM. You know, a society that cannot prevent somebody from getting bludgeoned by a hatchet, taking out money from an ATM, from somebody who was arrested multiple times before, has a real problem with its understanding of law and order. I'm just reading now about a woman in Minneapolis who's been going around stabbing people, and the judge keeps letting her out. So we now embrace this idea that America's incarceration is due to racism. It's not true. We don't have a mass incarceration problem in this country. We have a mass crime problem. The Pew and the left and always likes to compare U.S. incarceration rates to other industrialized countries like Germany or Japan. What they inevitably leave out of those comparisons are the fact that our gun homicide rate is sometimes about 48 times higher than other industrialized countries. There's nothing that compares to the United States for violent crime. We're in a league of our own. And comparisons to China and Russia are suspicious, because I don't think that we can know, especially from China, what the actual numbers are.
And why would you say that among Western countries, the United States has a violent crime rate that, as you put it, is in a league of its own? Why should the United States have a higher crime rate dramatically than Canada or Great Britain or Australia, or for that matter, than France?
Well, family breakdown, and, you know, we have a population here with the highest rate of family breakdown, which is blacks. The crime rate, if you took out black crime from the U.S. population, our crime rate would be much comparable. It would maybe slightly higher. You know, people like James Q. Wilson have said that America has always been more violent, sort of the frontier mentality. But our crime rate, violent crime rate, is overwhelmingly driven by the black population, and its crime rate is overwhelmingly driven by the fact that 71% of black children are raised by single mothers and they're not being socialized adequately.
But if you want to cite that as a causal relationship, Heather, how do you explain the fact that we brought the crime rate down so drastically, even at a time when the problem of a single motherhood family breakup, that didn't get better over the last 30 years, and yet the rate of violent crime got much better? Why?
That's a very excellent question. You know, liberals have their root causes, which are poverty and racism, and conservatives like me have my root cause, which is family breakdown, and you're absolutely right. It did not improve. But what did change drastically is our law enforcement practices. And so we stopped winking at low-level public order. We did make sentencing more certain. We did introduce three strikes and you're out laws for repeat felons. And we said to the police, you know, go do your jobs. Don't back off under the phony charge of racism. But now we're back to that mentality that says that any law enforcement practice that has a disparate impact on blacks is by definition racist, and cops are backing off. And we've seen last year is likely to be the largest percentage increase in homicide in this nation's history, and the result is dozens of black children who have been killed in the most insane, barbaric drive-by shootings, you know, killed in their beds and front yards and barbecues and birthday parties and in their parents' cars. This is going on a regular basis, and the media doesn't pay attention to it because they're not killed by cops or whites, they're killed by other blacks.
And this goes to the very fundamental point that you make in your book, The War on Cops, and that is essential to begin any meaningful conversation about law enforcement or public safety, which is that there is disparate impact of the whole question of criminality and law enforcement, disparate impact on black people. But it's primarily a disparate impact of crime. It is more one-sided in terms of victimization than any impact of law enforcement, isn't it?
True. Blacks die of homicide between the ages of 10 and 43 at 13 times the rate of whites. That is a civil rights problem that the left should care about, but they don't.
And it is a profound problem for America, among many. One of those problems, the question of vaccine hesitancy, should be addressed very directly by this FDA decision. By the way, if you're out there and you're somebody who has been waiting for the FDA certainty and now you're going to go ahead and get yourself vaccinated, you can give us a call. We'll take you right after the break. 1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. Heather McDonald, thank you as always for your clarity on public health and public safety. Her new piece on the vaccine question and challenge from the Spectator is actually posted at our website, michaelmedved.com. We'll be right back. While people are worried about fighting escalating in Afghanistan, there's another form of fighting that is escalating. We'll get to it in a moment. It's the mask wars here in the United States. But before we get there, I'm very proud to welcome to our program a new sponsor. And it's only a new sponsor after I've actually tried it out myself. And I think this stuff actually works. It's called PH7. And the idea of this product, Balance 7, is a pH balance for your body. And you can read all about it, is something that brings all kinds of benefits. And this product, which you take three little 1 ounce sips a day, usually one in the morning, one in the evening, one before you go to bed. That's fine. It delivers more energy, it relief from joint discomfort, it boosts your immunity, It optimizes your pH balance and relieves heartburn and aids in digestion and more. And right now, if you go to balance7.com, that's balance, the number 7.com, and if you use the code Michael Medved at checkout, you receive a free 4-ounce bottle of My Smooth Skin with any purchase of Balance 7 products. My Smooth Skin regularly retails at $13.99, and it's free with your Balance 7 dietary supplement order if you use the promo code Michael Medved. So go to balance7.com, use the promo code Michael Medved at checkout to get in on the free My Smooth Skin promotion with your order. That's balance7.com, balance7.com. All right, there's no balance to what is going on right now in terms of the mask madness. Teachers have been punched. Parents are wielding bullhorns and even getting charged with crimes, so reports Axios. Here in Washington, I believe today, as of today, the masks are required again, and maybe even required more aggressively than before. School board members, county commissioners, doctors, and local leaders are regularly confronted with angry taunts that compare them to the Taliban, to Marxists, and more, AP reports. In Austin, a parent ripped off a teacher's face mask during a Meet the Teacher event, which is becoming a Punch the Teacher event. Other parents screamed at teachers, demanding they remove their face coverings. Outside Sacramento, a parent left a teacher bleeding and actually requiring hospital treatment after the parent tried to attack the principal over masks and the teacher jumped in. That reported by KCRA. In Nevada and Pennsylvania, school board meetings this month got so out of hand that police were called. We even played you some of that horrifying video, which is mentioned, by the way, in my column in Newsweek today. There's a video of Franklin, Tennessee, of a school board meeting for Williamson County. And doctors and nurses were testifying there, and then they were threatened, literally threatened, as you'll never be able to show your face in public again. That kind of threat. I mean, honestly, over masks? Really? I just let me mention something here. If you're going on an airplane, if you're flying, if you're going to risk it, and yeah, there's a certain amount of risk with COVID-19 with the Delta variant now being so aggressive and so prominent and so ubiquitous in our world right now. Do you really think it's a terrible idea for somebody who's riding next to you on an airplane for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours if you're taking a coast-to-coast flight? Such a terrible idea for somebody to wear a mask? Really? I know it's uncomfortable. I know it's uncomfortable. But honest to goodness, get some perspective. By the way, and most people, I think, are reasonable about this. I went on a hike with a bunch of friends on Sunday. And, you know, a little bit drizzly morning, but it was a... Went to Lake Tilapas Lake, which is in the Cascades. It's near Snoqualmie Pass. And there are a lot of people on the trail, and most of them were wearing masks. And again, that's on the trail, it's outside, it's not required. But given the difficulties and the challenges that our country is facing right now with the continued pandemic, and with the news today that now people should be lined up like crazy for getting the vaccination. It now is FDA approved. There's so many people who were saying, well, when it gets FDA approval, I'll think about it. Think about it. Do it. Take care of yourself. There are folks who need you. And speaking of people we need, Andrew Sullivan, who was on our show last week, this week he's promoting a new book, but he was on with Bill Maher on Real Time. And Andrew Sullivan gave a passionate presentation, I think very effective, about why America should resist the woke takeover of our institutions. This is clip 3A.
I don't know why it's so terrible to have someone in a magazine or in a complete a mix of things, to have someone, a dissenter, in a magazine. It's fun, right? I mean, that's the whole point. I grew up wanting to debate, wanting to argue. I had a big Irish Catholic family. We fought about everything. What was the problem? And afterwards, we got together, we had a nice drink, we were totally cool about it. If the editors are responding to social media, Twitter,
right,
is what creates these online mobs that create this pressure,
right,
on the editors to fire individual writers, even if the editors are fine with the writer. And the real problem with this is not so much the woke and the online media, because they are awful and they should be ignored, but they aren't. It's the point of the people running these institutions, liberal institutions, universities, magazines, newspapers. They don't have the balls to say no. We will. We do believe in a plurality of views. We are going to defend unpopular writers.
Okay, and then this about looking at the world as individuals or groups, which one? Listen to clip 4A.
There are two ways to think of looking at the world. And one is to see it as individuals coming against each other, regardless of their race or sex, and having a conversation, using reason, persuading each other, or not persuading each other, deliberating the common good for democracy. That's what it's about. But when you start defining people, not as individuals, but as members of a race or a gender, and then saying that some races have to be given more precedence over other races, some genders have to be preferred to other genders, and what we cannot have a conversation without having all of that set out in advance. This started in the universities, it becomes obsessive in people's minds. And then the newspapers and magazines and journalists actually were desperate for money, brought in a whole bunch of very young people straight out of these colleges, and didn't have the balls to put up with them. And then all of us are in this current climate in which things like due process, finding out if something is true or not before you condemn somebody, taking a person's whole body of work into account instead of thinking one single thing you're going to get damned for forever.
Okay, this is a tremendously important perspective. And so is the perspective that he goes on to state about why America is not the most racist country in the world. It's, in fact, a miracle in terms of so many things. We will get to that and also get to the debate about whether or not to take all of these thousands of Afghan refugees that the government is now planning to take, hoping to take. We'll get to that and more coming up on the MedVed Show.
I am so shocked you're talking like this.
Michael MedVed.
Michael Medved show, talking about the remarkable interview, and it was remarkable, as many of his interviews are. Andrew Sullivan, who is out with a new book, was on with Bill Maher. And Bill Maher has also been a surprising, for basically a guy who's a liberal comedian. He doesn't sound like a liberal comedian. He sounds very often like a patriotic American who's actually determined to find a middle way and the truth. And he was on with Andrew Sullivan talking about the need to teach all of American history honestly, including our history on race. Listen.
I know you've written a lot about how we seem to have be giving up on the idea of a colorblind society, which used to be the goal. It's like we didn't change. You changed.
Right.
I still think that should be the goal.
It is the goal. It must be the goal. Because our humanity matters more than
right.
the part of humanity we're from. And America, of all places, the most multiracial, multicultural society on Earth, will not survive if we are constantly in warfare between groups or genders. We can absolutely should acknowledge that this country has a racist history that needs to be confronted directly.
And taught.
Absolutely. And
taught in school.
Frankly.
Yes, of course.
And the point is, but you can do that. What they want to do is say that is the single meaning of America.
Right.
Racial oppression. Nothing else matters. The country was founded in 1619, not 1776, because slavery is what this country is about. Well, you know what? It is about that. We are. But we are also about so much else. We're about religious
yes.
freedom. We're about freedom of speech. We're about the empowerment of minorities.
And things have changed greatly since 1619.
It's look,
and
you go anywhere in the world. Do you think the Chinese are less racist than we
right.
are? You think the Russians
of course,
are?
No.
It's a miracle what no. we do in this country.
Right.
Okay, these are such good points and so much worth basically embracing. And also, another sign, it seems to me, of the innate goodness of the American people and the transcends considerations of race or ethnicity comes in a new poll featured in Forbes that shows that the vast majority of Americans of both parties support the idea of taking in Afghans who assisted the U.S. military during the war in Afghanistan. There's a new poll that shows that, as more than a half a dozen Republican governors expressed for taking in Afghan refugees. This is a CBS News YouGov poll released Sunday. It found 81%. 81%, 4 out of 5. Of 2,142 U.S. adults said the U.S. should, quote, help those Afghans come to the U.S., while just 19% said they should not. In other words, you're talking about a 4-to-1 majority that says, yes, people who helped the U.S. and served the U.S. and risked their lives for the U.S. are welcome here. And that includes, by the way, of Trump voters, 79%, of Republicans, 76% who favor accepting the Afghan allies of the U.S., and 90% of Democrats. And that's part of why what Jim Acosta said on CNN, and that's Jim Acosta, I know, he's never been my favorite TV journalist. But Jim Acosta had this to say about that the pictures of Afghans clinging to military planes and more, and used it to insult the what he presumes to be the audience for Fox News. Listen.
But I digress. The pictures of Afghans clinging to military planes are not what riles up the Fox audience. It's these images of Afghans loaded onto those planes.
Okay, that is not at all what this poll shows, where it shows 76% of Republicans favor taking those Afghans. They're riled up by it in the sense of favoring it very directly, as does Ben Sasse. And there was this with Chris Wallace that showed some divide in the Republican Party. But listen, this is clip 9.
It's quite a split inside your party about bringing our Afghan allies, the people who stood up for us for those last 20 years, bringing them into this country. GOP Congressman Tom Tiffany says the Biden administration's plan to bring plane loads into the U.S. now and ask questions later is reckless and irresponsible. Ohio Republican Senate candidate J.D. Vance, author of Hillbilly Elegy, says he'd like to hear zero about Afghan refugees until we get every single American out first. Senator, there's a real difference of opinion inside your party.
First of all, a great nation is a nation that keeps its word. The American people need to understand who we're talking about here. We're talking about men and women who risked their lives to protect Americans. They fought hand in hand with our troops, and we made promises to them. There are 32 million Afghans. We're talking about 60 to 80,000 people. So the first thing to say is the American people need to understand who we're talking about. We're talking about heroes who fought with us to take the fight to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. Number two, the administration has been way too slow to get people out of harm's way. They can get them to Kuwait. They can get them to Qatar. They can get them to Bahrain. They can get them to Ramstein in Germany and sort through the larger processing and bureaucratic issues there. But number three, when you fought on behalf of Americans to protect our people, you're welcome in my neighborhood.
His neighborhood in Nebraska. Good for Senator Sasse. And of course, there needs to be the proper sorting through and vetting and caution about any terrorists smuggling their way into the United States, because the terrorist threat isn't over. One of the disasters about what's happened in Afghanistan is that terrorism has gotten such a profound encouragement by this victory for that particular faction. Speaking about a victory for that particular faction, there's a new movie that is scaring the dickens out of people around the country. It's, if you've ever seen a very sophisticated haunted house movie, well, this is one where the widow of a departed suicide victim as feels a presence in her domicile. It's called wrong movie. Reminiscence is with Hugh Jackman, and it's a very different movie. We'll get to Night House later.
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minute.
Hugh Jackman plays a tough guy with a broken heart who operates a machine that can bring people's memories back to vivid life in the futuristic film noir Reminiscence, now playing in theaters and streaming on HBO Max.
Nothing is more addictive than the past.
How close can you get before the illusions spread, or the illusion?
You're going on a journey. All you have to do is follow my voice.
And all you have to do is listen to the dialogue to see what's wrong with this pretentious pastiche of much better old films. Rebecca Ferguson plays the part of what used to be called a soiled angel who becomes a deadly obsession for the haunted main character, while Thandie Newton, his loyal assistant, tries to protect him. The subplot about a future Miami nearly underwater from climate change adds nothing, while a series of ultra-violent sequences make the PG-13 rating a joke. 1.5 stars for Reminiscence. Despite the title, there's hardly anything about the film that's actually memorable. You see, that's how come I confused it with another film that is going to be, we'll review tomorrow. A film called A Night House. That's the one about the haunted house. Okay, on the MedVed show tomorrow, one of the questions about President Biden is, why didn't he speak to his own members of Congress, or Republicans as well, on something as momentous as the decision on Afghanistan? Or did he speak to those members of Congress? We'll be speaking to the Democratic chair of the House Armed Services Committee, Congressman Adam Smith from right here in Washington State. We'll also be speaking to John Bolton. Was the Afghan war worth it? The former UN ambassador, who was part of the Bush administration during the early years of that war, has a distinctive perspective. And a kinder, gentler Taliban. Really? Then why would they very publicly beat a woman to death for not cooking? That and other great questions, we'll face them all next time in this greatest nation on God's green earth.